Hello, hello, family. We are back. Welcome back to Can We Talk with Jewel podcast. I hope all of you are doing well. I want to welcome back all of our loyal and cherished supporters. Thank you so much for chiming in and checking in weekly. I hope you guys found last week's podcast insightful because it really hit home for me, and you know how much I love to be authentic with you guys. So that was our little one-on-one date that we haven't had in some time. So I was glad to have that with you guys. But welcome back to the podcast, proudly sponsored by FundraisingCup.org Ministries. So ladies and gentlemen, I hope you are ready to delve into more topics that we have coming up this month to uplift our communities and nurture our spiritual growth. Please continue to donate and support this ministry and mission of love and light. You can do so online at fundraisingcup.org ministries, or you can call in as well and make a donation to help women and children. Okay, so today I am really excited. Don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I'm also humbled to welcome our new guest, Miss Cindy Cooper, whom I have been following. I got to tell you guys, this highly blessed and anointed and favored woman on LinkedIn for quite some time now. And when I tell you she is a ray of sunshine, ladies and gentlemen, I kid you not. Some of you may even need some sunglasses if you can't handle the rays she's going to give off today. She is not just an intelligent entrepreneur, influencer, nurturer, like almost like a second mother, ladies, at least to me and many other women that have been on LinkedIn. I think this is something that we haven't had in our culture for some time now. You know, just having another female to encourage you, support you, and give you that wisdom as you go along your journey to become the best you you can be is all encompassed in this one phenomenal woman. Oh, my goodness. And I just, as you can see, I can't say enough good things about this woman and rolling out that red carpet for this sister. So welcome to the podcast. Welcome, Sister Cynthia.
Thank you so much. I don't know if I can follow up behind that introduction, but I really appreciate it. Happy International Women's Day to all the women out there. And yes, I hope this day has enlightened you to stand up together, to hold your sister's hand and bring her along with you. When you rise up to your success, you won't have to look for people that you can trust. You bring her with you. That's take on today. You bring your sisters with you. So I just want to say thank you for having me. Thank you for being interested in anything that I would have to say to help you. I am so impressed with following you, Jewel, to see all the technology that you master. I am so impressed. I used to have an office where I had a computer where I wrote proposals and I wrote letters, and I had a staff that critiqued everything. And they had computers each, and then they needed another one when we did a hire. And they said, well, you don't do anything but type. If you can have a typewriter. I said, nobody's getting my computer. They said, all you do is play solitaire. I'm like, I make money to pay you. Regardless of what I'm doing on my computer, but don't touch my computer. We can order some more, but you can share the ones. You got three out there. It's only three of you. And in training, you train on a Saturday. We had an office that ran 24 hours a day for the immunization hotline. The immunization hotline for the City of Milwaukee Health Department and the state of Wisconsin. You name it, we had every contract that went to minority businesses around health-related issues in this corporation that I accidentally started by walking out of corporate America. I walked out on a Friday not knowing what was going to happen. I just couldn't deal with my last fight with them as an advocate on behalf of the member. They really abused me for 2 weeks, but I held my head up, did the 2 weeks notice, and walked out not knowing where I was going. And that Monday morning, I got a call from the Black Health Coalition saying, can you do this project for us? It was called TKO Tobacco, for not letting kids smoke, or doing a campaign about kids smoking. And now I smoked at the time. I mean, I smoked real heavy at the time. So I'm like, well, could I do it? Yeah, for kids I could. So I had a $14,000 contract. The weekend after, I didn't know where I was going to get a penny. Now, that was God. So I had to come up with a corporation name. I was working in the community. It should have been nonprofit, but I had to go. So I made it a for-profit, and then I paid the money back by training the community in job-related, entry-level jobs, so they could go from welfare to work. So I put it right back in there. So I was clearing about $250,000 a year, but I was putting it back. I was putting it right back, paying $10 an hour for training. And we got every contract that came through for minority health initiatives. We, the girls from the community, or the women and the guys, were training, but I was giving them salary until they were placed, and they usually got placed within a matter of 2 to 3 months if they followed through with the training. I had a director and then two staff members, but I don't know technology. Not since I walked out of corporate. They train you in corporate to use all the equipment geared to corporate, but the training, once you walk out, I guess you should know a little bit more than I did when I walked out. Where are you going to get your training from? So the people I hired had training and connections to training, so they did the technical work, where I did the selling and the developing and creativity of new jobs. I work for CDC. That's federal government. I work for the state. I work for the county. And then I also had contracts with the city health department. So, bad girl.
Oh, my goodness.
Bad girl. And then when I didn't know a portion of the community that they were reaching for, I subcontracted with the health initiatives, like the Black Health Coalition would hire me for something. I would hire the Latino Health Coalition, the Hmong of Family Worshipers, and let's see what other group we had in there. We had something with, when we needed something in German, we had it coordinated where I would pay them a portion to subcontract with me, and we did it together. And that's pretty much missing in business right now, is that nobody wants to help anybody else. They want to, sole proprietorship. I'm not helping anybody because that's going to help. That's going to break me down. That's not true. You get a partner, and then when they come back, they get a contract maybe, and they will come back and partner with you. That's the way it was about 30-some years ago. But now it's really not nice out there. And one of the guys that I was helping, he passed away, rest his soul. He was putting his hand on the pulse of his business after 10 years, and he passed away. He said, you got to be cutthroat. If you're going to make it out there now, you got to be cutthroat. I'm like, no. I ain't cutting nobody's throat, and I'm not fighting about nothing. I'm not going to do it that way. But he passed as soon as he had his hand on it. You know, I was real hurt by that because I was helping him, but I didn't want to partner with him. He was a next-door neighbor, too. his mother and my mother were friends. They grew up in this neighborhood. And he told me, you got to be cutthroat. And you can run a business from anywhere if you know the technology. I'm like, well, I don't. But he was helping me before he passed. Uh-huh. I'm really lost now because he would tell me, don't hook on to that. Don't tap on to that. You know, I've been hacked so many times. It's fun now. When somebody hacks me, I'm like, what did you want? I didn't have anything when you hacked me. If you wanted to rob me, I went for free. There's no money in the account. I got a dollar in each account. I work for free. I work for Jesus. He don't work with money. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of contact with a lot of pastors, and that's how I'm fed spiritually. And most of them are on Facebook. Let's see if anybody, I think everybody stayed in the pastor realm on Facebook. LinkedIn is mostly business people. That yeah. I love entrepreneurial businesses, people that are starting out. If I see them and they're doing good, I'm going to promote them up because that's mm-hmm. the hardest job you will ever have in your entire life. You.
That's right.
It's about you. And so it's a lonely job. All the decisions you make are based on you and what you believe. And you can tap into something else and they'll take you down. You don't know who you're contracting with anymore. People are selfish and heartless. Yeah. Most of the yeah. business I like is the ones that's connected to God, a Christian type business. You know, like they believe in God. If you don't believe in God, you're so powerful that you don't need God. I don't want you with me because you're up alive. You know, I don't do it for money. I do it for mm-hmm. feeling good about myself. You know, that I help somebody, and I know that usually when you help somebody, they'll be there for you when you fall.
Exactly.
Or you need, you know, but I learned to depend on Jesus a long time ago in my family, you know, in my personal family. And like I say, most of the days my mother didn't like me because I always yeah. talked about God. It's like, would you lay yeah. off that? You know, stop mm-hmm. correcting people. Be quiet. Not about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's who comes when I cry. You know, I grew up taking care of my siblings. When my
yeah.
father walked out at age 9, he said, take care of your mother. Don't disrespect her. But you take care of her and you take care of my family. Now, he never looked back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he never looked back for me. And I'm like, do you know where you left me? You know, the people she brought through there were, I mean, horrible people. And it's like, where'd you get this little kid right here? Like, I'll be blocking, not my brothers and sisters. No, you take my mother wherever you want to take her, but not here. I run this show. My daddy mm-hmm. told me. My daddy told mm-hmm. me I run this show. But I did that for all my life. And it's not that way right now. When she passed, I saw some demons come up that I'm mm-hmm. related to. I'm related to them. They've been biting me for 10 years, and I'm praying to God, Lord, please, don't let my ugly come, because I'm not just the B word. I'm the B word to train the B words that's after me. I can rip their heads off. I can rip their heads off without a thought.
Yeah.
You don't remember me.
Yeah,
you know, I've been quiet.
That's
I've been quiet. I'm saying, this ain't something you want. Don't come for me. Don't
That's
wake
right.
her up.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Let me tell you, my mother tried to commit suicide when I was 13. And she almost made it. Some doctor jumped in her chest and brought her back twice.
Uh-huh.
She tried to commit suicide. Do you hear me? I hit
yes.
my knees saying, Lord, if you let her come back to these raggedy brats, I promise you she will never want for anything in her entire life. So I've been
yeah.
serving her since the age of 13 for anything she wanted. Anything. And then finally, after we separated, she gave me to my babysitter at age 16 to get me out of her house. Because, mm-hmm. you know, her new man didn't like me because not my sister, not my, I was running. Mm-hmm. I was blocking. What do they call it an unworthy name, but they called me a C blocker. Because mm-hmm. I interrupt stuff. Not these babies. These belong to my daddy. And ain't nobody going to corrupt them. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Not while I'm on mm-hmm. watch. So at 16, I was kind of put out. And so mm-hmm. I tried to come back twice. Twice I tried to come back. She said, there's no room for you. You got this baby right here. There's no room for you. And I go back. He said, he's not going to hit you anymore. Go back. And I went back twice. I turned 18. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going back to her. I stood my ground.
Mm-hmm.
He swung. I'm a big girl. I always was upset about being big, you know, too big. But I know why now. There's mm-hmm. not a man I fought that I didn't win. Twice my size, I'll break you down. I got four large brothers, but I fed mm-hmm. them food, and I controlled them with food. You mess with me, you won't get to eat. You know, there's power. There's mm-hmm. power. There's power in that. It's like, mess with me, you won't get a pork chop. I'll burn your pork mm-hmm. chop. So I had power over my brothers, but...
You know what, Miss Cynthia, it's so funny you said that, and I'm just going to comment briefly and you can continue.
Mm-hmm.
But, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of our elderly women, they did not necessarily share the power in cooking food for the men. You know, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. it's become this, I think more in modern times, like this docile idea of being a home maiden or something like that. You don't feel as powerful, you know, in terms of having a corporate title and things of that nature. But you don't realize mm-hmm. the power that these women mm-hmm. held in being these homemakers and being the source of nutrition. I mean, that's definitely not mm-hmm. someone you want to mess with. You're so right about mm-hmm. that. And I'm gonna mm-hmm. let you continue, but I wanted to touch on that because I think a lot of us may want to reconsider reclaiming some of that power back.
I know, because they say, remember, I don't know if you're that old, but old enough to know that, is the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. It's true.
Through his stomach, yes.
And,
yes.
My brother weighed over 300 pounds, and in the plan here, I was supposed to, I went to classes to learn how to cook for diabetics, and we're going to have a bed and breakfast. That was the plan my mother and I had, but I needed to find out how to cook the things that I used to cook with the diabetic in mind. So he lost 50 pounds so far, and he looks good, and he's walking around, and I'm looking at him, and he went to take this shot thing for diabetes and what have you. I don't make any sweets or like I used to do. Every weekend there was a banana pudding or peach cobbler or cookies. They always order these peanut butter cookies. And I just stopped cooking because I'm trying to turn it over to my daughter. It was mm-hmm. called You Buy, I Fry, Bake, Boil, or whatever. It was a neighborhood restaurant. And my whole house smelled like chicken at one time because everybody wanted this fried chicken. I had a deep fryer. And everybody would call. I didn't have a restaurant. I just made them pay so that I could reorder the stuff. And everybody's husband wanted this fried chicken. You know, it was like even when I was married, and my sister-in-laws would get together, and they always wanted me to do the chitlins, you know, and I'm like, why do y'all make me do the nasty chicken? I don't like that. And they said, because you're the lowest on the totem pole. Guess what? They didn't get any more.
Oh.
No, I didn't like No, I'm not the lowest on the totem pole where I got to cook all the chitlins. I cook the chitlins at my house for my husband. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
on the holidays, I look around, I got all the men at my house. It's like, wow. I know food is the way to a man's heart. I don't care. But no, I don't get mistreated. You may not want me, but I know where my bread is buttered, and I don't have to be served disrespect anywhere, yeah. Anytime. No, I'm not going to have it. So that's my makeup. It's like, I don't believe I was my mother's daughter. I was here to be her mother and guidance, because that's where mm-hmm. she came, was to me, to cry about her children. I laugh at yeah. them or say something. She says, leave my babies alone. I said, that's what's wrong with them. They spoil rotten. mm-hmm. They're spoil rotten, and then you can't stand to hear them cry. Let them go. You get yes. to live after you raise your child to 18. Everybody gets mm-hmm. a chance at life. That's not what you do for the rest of your life. It's be a mom. And it's like, if I say this to you, maybe I hope you understand what I'm saying. I never aspired to be a mother. But mm-hmm. that's all that God trained me to be. And I always say, a mother by nature. I was trained even in corporate. I laughed about it, but when they came to tell me how to take care of these bad tail salesmen, they said, treat them mm-hmm. like you're their mother. Cover their butts. I'm like, what? Cover their butts. Keep them out of trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, they're such good salesmen. But they get in trouble. But when the thing comes through the phone line, you take care of it and keep them off their back, because we don't want them, you know, to fall. We want them to keep selling.
Yeah.
Treat them like their mother. Cover their butt. Mm-hmm. It's what I was trained to do. And I was like, I got all the way to 69 before I understood. God's telling me that's all you're going to be as a mother. And that's something I refuse to be from a child. How ironic is that?
Mm-hmm.
How ironic is that? All I ever been was a mother.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, a businesswoman, yeah, but I nurture like a mother. I bleed like a mother. You know, like, if something's happening to somebody, they trick me all the time with the compassion thing. They get me every time. Mm-hmm. I think I'm gullible. Because when I heard that the United States was being given back to the people who rightfully owned it, I'm claiming they're going to give it back to the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gullible. Mm-hmm. I'm that gullible, because I was like, wow, they're going So we don't want to talk about politics. Leave that all the way out. But I believe that we are here for a purpose. And my
mm-hmm.
purpose is to help you if I can. I won't hurt you.
Yes.
I guarantee you
yes.
I'll walk away before I hurt you. And I'm getting
That's
much
right.
better at prayer, because I can pray before I reach you. You know, because my body has slowed down being old. But I used to could reach you as soon as I snap. So
yes.
I didn't need anger management. I needed prayer. Because it'll mm-hmm. stop whatever it is that you hit me with. I'm not going to retaliate. I'm going to go to prayer. I'm going to pray that God save you with this prayer, because I'm big enough to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you another story about who I developed being, and I laugh a lot. Everything is pretty funny to me. The name Cindy. I mean, let me say this correctly, politically correctly. It's for a little white girl.
Mm-hmm.
And my voice sounded white on the phone. I mean, it wasn't that it sounded white. That's what my black friend said to me. You sound like a white girl. I'm like, well, I'm speaking proper English, and I'm sorry if I sound white. It is 30 years back. From this voice right here, because I've been hollering
mm-hmm.
in this community. I mean, yelling and cussing and stuff. They like that better. But when a person would call, ironic about a bill, they would give me the call. I have handled grievances and disagreements and what have you. But when they talk to me, they're okay. And when they come in with their bills and I meet them out in the lobby, Cindy Cooper appears through that door, 200-something pounds, and their mouth, they can't speak. And I'm laughing on the inside because I knew what they were expecting. And they get to see me, and it's like, we're going to talk about what color I am, or we're going to talk about that bill you won't pay. So I had a corporate spiel on that name as far as going to Minnesota, United Healthcare. I call their name because I was feeling bad for the last few months about the CEO getting killed. Uh-huh. You know, I've been feeling really bad. Like, had I stayed and fought for the position, would they understand what I was saying? But I couldn't change a corporation that big. I had it in the corporation that I worked for that they purchased. We understood that you cannot treat people bad and disrespectful and take their money. I had a voice. Mm-hmm. I had a platform. I had a community platform when they come in and say, you did this and that. I said, if it didn't come across my desk, it's not a problem. Yeah. I'm your advocate. I speak for you. If it's wrong, I'll make them fix it. You know, that's my job. But if it didn't come through my desk, on my desk, on my phone line, it's not an issue. And not only did I train myself, I trained every other insurance company advocate. It was a mandatory position. Did I want it? No. You know why I didn't want it? I was training to be a salesperson. I got the license, everything. I'm ready. I did the business product. I'm ready. And they said, we want you to be an advocate. I'm like, no, I don't want to go home. I don't want to go back in the inner city. I want to wear diamonds and things like they do. Do you know they made that advocate job mirror the salesperson job before they gave it to me? They doubled my salary. So it was the best thing that ever happened to me. But I was refusing, kicking and screaming. I don't want to walk in the inner city. I don't have street sense. They're going to beat me up and send me home. You know, I didn't have, you know, you ever heard of a person raised in the ghetto but didn't be in the ghetto? Mm-hmm. They would whip my tail and send me home. I was so scared. You know, mm-hmm. I had to throw away my clothes, my diamonds, everything. I was scared, actually scared. But I went because I said I would. You know, I cried for 2 weeks, then I took the job. And it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me because I could take those skills that I learned and I started a company. I had no idea what I was doing. And every insurance company contracted with me to take their advocates and keep them in the loop with me. Mm-hmm. That was God. That wasn't them but God.
Yeah.
There was nothing but God because they kept asking me, what did your company do? And I kept saying, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And so they want to know why I give away so much. My family has been upset with me because I don't make any money anymore. I don't need any money. You do. I'm doing fine. I'm happy. I will make money when I learn how not to give it to you. You know, everything came to my pocket. And then so finally when I closed my company and came this way to help my mother and her friends, I said, let's all be poor because, Mom, I'm not making any more money for you to, you know, give to your children. Let's all be poor together. So I came down trying to start her nonprofit in this area, but I couldn't get in sideways because if I offered it in a proposal, I look around, somebody's doing it, but I wasn't part of the picture. So it's a real close-knit corporation-type government that I couldn't get into, but I could do this community. I could, you know, they call me for information. I listen to the news. I'm like, no, that's not what they said. What they mean is this. You know, what they mean is that. I do a translation for the elderly, but their offspring start coming. I'm like, no, you're the same age I am. You go read it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I sound mean? I don't mean to be sounding mean, but they come for me asking me stuff that they know they can do themselves. I've learned to turn it away, you know, turn it off. But you come in here and you lead me in a different direction if you need me to go, but I can talk forever. That's what I do. That's what I do best. I help people. I encourage people. I support them. I have a problem where I love being alone. I love being with God in the Bible. I love talking scripture. I love how it matches what goes on and you're looking right at it. Because if this stuff ain't in the Bible, if this ain't in the Bible, you got fire over here, you got rain over there, you got people acting crazy and hating. I ain't never seen nothing like this before in my entire life. Or it was hidden. It's transparent now. Where people hate you, you know they hate you. They used to cover it up. I told my girlfriend, I said, no wonder they don't have no more January white sales. You don't need no sheep. You don't need, what was it, 1955, Rosa Parks days. My father and mother decided to move from here before the Civil War or whatever they were doing to Wisconsin. So I actually was raised in Wisconsin from 2 to about 45. So my view isn't the same as being stuck here. And then my great-grandmother would say, I said, you got a lot of people graduating from college, Grandma. And she said, you get the degree, they don't want to stay here. And then, why would they want to stay here in a rural area that's not going anywhere? I understood that part. So here I be. I didn't leave because I promised her that I would do her will. What she wanted was a community built of the people that used to work for her. I didn't know she was an entrepreneur until I went to Phoenix Online College, and I did a paper on my great-grandmother. She passed at 107. She lived by herself. And she hired all the people in this community which my mother sold to, you know, land to. And that's what she had ordered to be done, is to build this community for the people that used to work for her. So it's been a blessing to me to fight since about 85. When my mother took reign of the properties and the sales and what have you. But my mother has no financial, she had no financial background. And like I said, I did her balance of her checkbook. I wrote the checks. I took care of the family. I bought the meals. I cooked the meals. So I was more like her mother than she was mine. And, when she got in trouble, I send the money to get her out of trouble. But the money actually belonged to my great-grandmother. And I felt it was wrong when somebody gives you the reins to do something, you have to do what they want in living or death. You know, follow through on their dreams. They earned the money, and you have no right to take it from them. And that's where I am today, is thinking, how could you take her money and do what you want because your kids want this and then not be able to bury her? You see, I'm not trying to be negative to my mother or disrespectful, but that was my ploy on it. I made sure it happened because I didn't think it was right. And, like, I don't have any money for anybody to argue over, but I will not be taken out of what I've already paid for. You know, if they want to sell everything, that's fine, but you're going to come bring yourself in my face and talk to me like a, you know, an adult person. You're not going to do stuff to aggravate me and make me crazy or take it from me. It's not yours. All for one and nothing for all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she did this to make us stay together, and she used to always try to make us be family. But they didn't want it. She should have let them go. Let them fly free. And then they come back being adult people on their own turf. You know, not trying to take from one another. This is the ugliest 10 years I've ever seen in my life. 10 years. But the blessing of the 10 years is that God answered my prayer to not let me fight. I don't want to fight. If you tell me what to do, Lord, I've been trying to leave. Actually, I would have been in Canada. My friend fell in love on LinkedIn, and she's in Europe now. I'd have been in Canada by myself. I was almost in Tennessee. And I just, the weekend that I was supposed to leave, a tornado came through and tore up Nashville. I would have been in a wheelchair in a hotel waiting for my friend, which he couldn't have got to me. So I was like, God, are you trying to tell me something? You know, I can't leave. And it's like I kept hearing, stay put. Let me be God. And this is where I am. This is where I'm still here. And I'm like, I need my hip done. And I want to go where my friends are in Wisconsin because I know they ain't going to let anything happen to me. I'm either going to make it. I'm either going to make it off that operating table. And then I have somebody to take care of me. And one girlfriend that passed away the year before this, she had set up for my apartment and everything and the doctors and everything set up for me. And I have friends, you know, from corporate, they go back 50 years. Nurses, still living. Dr. McManus runs the show. I don't know. I haven't heard from her in years, but she was like the community portion. I call it like mom and dad. The CEO of the largest insurance company in Wisconsin was my sidekick for 3 years. And then she was the head of the community, and my mom and dad, two different cultures. I'm in the middle of that. Just think of what I am. I'm a combination of community and corporate. Nothing like me. There is nothing that could compare to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because in corporate, I wanted to learn everything. I not only learn the Medicaid product, I learned the commercial product as well because I love to work. I was like a workaholic, I would think. But I wanted to know. And then they started sending me out in the community to do projects for the insurance company, and I started with something called Happy Birthday 2-Year-Old. Happy Birthday 2-Year-Olds. And Sean Robinson, famous John Robinson, did my first interview with campaign. No, it was called Happy Birthday 2-Year-Old. And my knees were, I mean, I wasn't used to being in public. But I was on the afternoon news, Channel 12, and she interviewed me about Happy Birthday 2-Year-Old. It was an immunization project that got the children of Milwaukee County, eventually the state of Wisconsin, to zero, you know, 100% immunization rate. So last week or so when I heard that a baby died in Texas, a man just died in Mexico, and about 200 children are affected with the measles virus. I was like, Lord, did I do right? Questioning myself. And I talked to the commissioner of health. He's on Facebook as a friend. And I said, do you believe this? He said, we've done all we can do. I'm like, no. I mean, that means you're gone. We could do something. You can't let children die. Children are not supposed to leave their parents. Parents are supposed to leave their children. With immunizations, measles, be for real. And that was making me sick last week. You know, hearing stuff, so I turned the news off. I couldn't hear anymore. I'm like, you can't just turn it off and it goes away. You got to do something. And I heard you talk about the kidnapping of girls and selling into slavery. And I'm like, do you know this is the number one capital where I am? Highway 5920?
Yes.
Did you know where I was?
I didn't know where you were, but I knew of that area, yes.
Yeah, it's the highest rating of trade of young girls and boys.
Human trafficking.
And I was like dumbfounded behind that.
Yeah.
How could we let stuff happen? You're throwing away the most valuable resource we have is our children.
Yes, ma'am.
Really, it's like sex trafficking. And this crazy stuff that's going on against women.
Mm-hmm.
What the world? Lord, you got to come back quickly.
Yes.
We need you now. We need you right now, because it's like I'm too old to march on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't help you there. Marching, you're going to have a porta potty. Or a bus or something that I'm sitting on to help you with the march, but we got to be able to do something.
And
to
you
make
know what?
Change.
I'll tell you something, sister. I think for a while, many of us have been looking towards oppressors or other races, other people, as being the catalyst of this human and sex trafficking, and not realizing that it's coming out of our own families. They're the ones that are spearheading a lot of times, giving locations and so forth to these people to take these children. We haven't thought that deep into it, because you would think to yourself, there's no way a loved one would sell out their own family or their own child.
It was just last week that I saw a mom sell her child for some clothes and some money.
Yes.
And I'm looking at it like, you did what? And then so when she finished with the clothes and spent the money, she came back to get the baby. And now she's in prison or in jail for selling her baby. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What can make you part with your child? I mean, Lord bless me that I never could come up with, you know, a reason that I had to sell my soul for my children. I thank God for that. I didn't get a penny on my back. I got them standing firmly, foot down in the mud, working hard, creating stuff. You know, creating something where ain't nothing available, working hard to feed my babies. And my daughter will turn 50 years old this month. Do you hear me?
Oh,
I want to celebrate. I want to celebrate.
Man.
Because I told her, I feel like I did all the work. I think it should be my party. 50 years, that's golden. And she just laughs. She just laughs. I don't know. You were the hardest. You know, and you know what? My mother ordered her. Uh-huh. Truth be told, my mother told me my husband wanted his own child, and as his uh-huh. wife, that was my duty.
Yes.
Okay, I heard her. I removed all the restraints to have this child. Then I thought about, this is my body. You can't make me have a baby. But by the mm-hmm. time I got back in, she was there. I tell my kids the truth. Mm-hmm. And she laughed. I said, because I got to thinking, how you going to have children when that's what you never wanted to be? My actual mm-hmm. inspiration was to be a doctor. Not a nurse, mm-hmm. a doctor. So how do you become that if somebody's telling you you can't be? But mm-hmm. 50 years old, 50 years, I told her, I should be partying. I should be partying. I did good. The older one is, he's 50, I think he'll be 54 in August. And wow. I had him at 15 years old, raped by a boyfriend, you know, on a date.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ugly, ugly world. But I did it. Yes, and I'm proud of me, and I will help anybody know that it's not all over. Close your eyes, go to sleep. Joy comes in the morning. If you make it through that night, you got it made. You know, don't let anybody mm-hmm. tell you what you can't do. Just tell them to move out of your way so you have room to do it. Am I putting you to sleep? I have that tendency.
No. Let me tell you, I find you to be a wealth of wisdom and experience, and I think I'm still in shock that you have a daughter 50 years old, because I'm here trying to do the math. Well, how you look like this and got a daughter that's 50 years old? I tell you, it just black don't crack. I don't understand the math. The math is a math for me. But no, man, you're not to be sweet. I am all
well,
ears.
Well, that's really sweet. Today, I'm feeling 70. Today, I'm feeling 70. But my son is 15 years younger than me.
Uh-huh.
And we have problems. We're so much alike that we, you know, he came here. The prodigal son left at 17, came back at 47. He gonna rule my life after my mother died. I'm like, boy, if you don't get yourself out of here, this is a queendom. Ain't no kings up in here. Ain't no service agreements that I need to take care of you no more. Go get your wife or girlfriend or something. But this ain't here. He stayed 3 years. We almost killed each other because he kept pushing me. You know, like, he the boss. How you going to be the boss of something that you ain't taking care of? I'm taking care of you. Do you understand? And so he's back where he want to be. He's happy. I love uh-huh. him with all my heart. But I don't know. We butt heads all the time. But I think it's because we're so uh-huh. much alike. And I told him the only thing that comes uh-huh. of a dreamer is to dream. The action is where you get what you need. If you don't take the chance, you're not going to have it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have it. So I hope you find what it is you're looking for, but you're already a star. You were born a star in my world. In the fact that they tried to take him from me, you know, saying she's too smart. She don't uh-huh. need, the doctors were trying to get him from me, and my mother said, well, what do you want? You want the kid or you want to go to college? And I said, I'll take mm-hmm. him. And she gave me the opportunity. I finished high school at 16. And me and him, and then she wouldn't let me go. The babysitter said, I'll take her. She said, you go with him, you can go. And I went with him, dedicated to be his wife. And it goes on from there. He changed after he signed the papers. Like, you know, when you get married, they sign the papers. They think it's ownership papers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he changed his whole demeanor towards me. We weren't friends anymore. You want to beat me? Because what? Your mama said what? my daughter laughs. I see she said, the color purple said, you told Harpo to beat me? And it makes my daughter laugh. I said, that's not funny. You could have been daddy-less. It's like, my father told me anybody hit me, they don't love me. You know, and he was a soldier. You know what soldiers do, break their necks. So, I'm not the one to be beat. You don't want to try to beat me. You want to try to love me into submission. You know, you want to be nice because the evilness don't work with me in no way whatsoever. You know, there's no way you can convince me in a fight to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could say some things, but that's not for broadcast information because you might play it in the church.
Yes.
No, you don't want to beat this girl. I don't take I don't take beatings well. Somebody gonna get hurt. You swing, I'm swinging back. You throw me, I'm gonna throw you three times. So I don't really know what else to say other than I am so happy for you and what you're doing, and I am so impressed by it. I was just listening and hearing you. I learn more about you every broadcast. I'm like, look at this child. She just gone. And it's like you say travel.
Yeah.
And I used to call you I used to call you Queen of the McQueens. And
yes, you did.
I thought that was the coolest name. How are your boys? And how you say mama two boys. I think it says mama boys or mama boys on your.
Yes, I'm a boy mom. I have three of them, actually. Yep.
Oh.
They're all.
I thought
it was
two.
Yes. Well, my youngest, he just turned eight. So he, you know, he's coming up with the other two older high school kids. But, yep, it's three of them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how's the oldest one?
He's doing very well. He's our star athlete, football player.
You know,
very,
how you have all
you
this
know,
time?
I don't even know. But,
I was trying to get ready for you today, and my ex-husband said I had a mind of like a pit bull. I stay focused on something all day long.
Yeah.
I've been focused on, okay, where are you going to sit? What you going to have? What you need? You know, so
yes.
I was wrapped up in this one thing, and I'm seeing all the things that you do, and three of them, Lord have mercy. My daughter has two, and I laugh because her hair is completely gray.
Oh, my
gosh. Working her. She got her hair done for her birthday, and she came through. I said, oh, baby, she has my mother's hair where it would grow down to the floor if she left it alone, but... She came in here so great. I'm like, it's really pretty, but that's really my hair you got right there.
That's
mine.
Funny.
it's completely great. But
wow.
I laugh because they're stressing her so far out with two. My mother had seven.
My mother had seven of them.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, Lord. No way in the world. I had two, but I had a great partner. This, you know, he doesn't like me to call him their stepfather, but he was with him, a boy man. He liked everything they liked, he liked, you know, the race cars, the zoos and all them different things. So I had a perfect partner or companion for my children. And that's where I work. I work 24/7. I work weekends and holidays. I work night. I work any hours to bring in because I wanted them to have everything. And I was like, I didn't mean for them to be spoiled, but I wanted them to have everything. So now in this part of my life, I would like to have them closer. But really, they're not close to me. I was never there. you know, on holidays or, you know, I was there for Christmas. But I like bringing in, and I like listening to them play and laugh. That was my joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I enjoyed hearing my children laugh because my first marriage was more of a negative where we had to be quiet in the corner, you know, real quiet, you know, keep them quiet. They were too disciplined, I think. So the second one, I think my daughter was, I think we met, she was 3 and my son was 7. But I enjoyed so much hearing them laugh out loud. If you sit and listen to a child laugh, and that is the most powerful thing a mother could hear, is that her child is that happy.
Mm-hmm.
And discipline, they call me the monster because I come in, and it's like, get this stuff up. You know, it's like, there she comes, messing up stuff. So I actually, truth be told, I had to go to a psychologist to learn how to live with these pigs because I like things in order. I like them clean. And so I would clean. And when I got to a room, another room, they weren't helping me now. This is all, after all this work. I come to clean on the weekend, and then I get one room, and I go to the next room. When I go back to the first room, they done messed it up. And then I get to fuss, and there she goes. There she goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had to go to a psychologist, and she said, you got 3 options. You either live with the filth, work with them to fix it up, or leave.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister and her 2 kids moved up on me when I asked her not to come in this little bitty house. I left. For 7 months, I left them and stayed in the condo with nothing in it. I didn't have anything but my clothes and the toothbrush and toiletries and the refrigerator stove, what have you. I stayed 7 months. Crazy it sounds, but I just couldn't take it anymore. And at the time, I had lost my, I had to walk out of my job. So you talk about being mentally stressed. I lost my home life, my work life, and just lost. Like I said, I was lost and didn't know which way to turn. My friends, 2 ladies, kept coming to this place with their Bibles. I'm trying to think of what year it was. If I started my company in 94, it had to be between 90 and 94. They would come, 2 friends of mine from work, from long ago, within the years, 50 years we've been knowing each other now. They came with their Bibles to take me to church, you know, to tell me what God could do for me. And I was so angry at the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
That one day I threw the Bible at the door, you know, telling them to leave me alone. What is in this Bible that could help me now? You know, I know what's in the Bible, but how could it help me now? I'm lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took me to church, and then the pastor said something, and I was wailing like a wounded whale in that church. And they walked me up on the stage, and then he pushed my head, and I fell to the floor. And they said, Cindy, you were saved, or whatever they were saying. I'm like, he pushed me. You know, like, he pushed me down. I don't know what you're talking about. Did you hear the way you were wailing? He had said something about, kids don't understand how much you love them. And I was having problems with my son, you know, like I couldn't connect with him. And he doesn't know how much I loved him. I don't know what he was angry about, but it's like I couldn't connect. And so after that, I started going to church with them. And let's see, I even partnered with the pastor and his wife, and we did some kind of community outreach work up there, you know, connecting with the churches. So when I came south, the Bible Belt, I thought I could get with the pastors because I have a good head on creating things. I got with a pastor up in Livingston, Alabama, and we were connecting to Jamaica, and we were doing with the state of Alabama. He wanted to set up, he was a builder, and he wanted to set up a training program out of his garage. He made it into like a classroom, and the dreams were coming true. And then his wife wanted me to stay and operate it. She was a school teacher, but she was retiring. And I said, Reverend, I didn't mean to stay. I mean, I meant it to be created for you and your community, but I had no intentions of staying. In fact, it had to be, my grandson will be 20 years old this month. So he was just born in 2005. And so he was just born, and they said, please come back. You run it. We were set up to get millions of dollars, but the wife didn't want to run it. She wanted to retire. And she said, she asked me, please come back. And, you know, I couldn't come back to live in Livingston. She said, we'll give you a house with your grandson can come with you. But I just couldn't do it because I just didn't want to be in a family that, I mean, this man loved this woman so much. She had strawberries when she walked out the front door. I didn't want to see that. Not that I was jealous, but to see every day you don't have anybody, you're just a servant to making their life better, I didn't want that. I wanted to create it for other people, too. You see, I just wanted to create it, and now I wanted to move and do it for another pastor. I had six pastors at one time where I was working on things to do outreach with, but each one was so, I don't know, what's the word, masculinity showing or ego showing. They didn't want to share. I'm like, I don't belong to anybody but God. You know, I don't want to be anybody's concubine. I don't want to be anybody's servant. I'm trying to help you. If you partner, I can bring you a lot of money, but it's supposed to be for your constituents, your community that you're serving. I don't think we're here for any other reason than to serve people. You know, you're not supposed to get rich off of this. You might get popular. Mm-hmm. Another thing I did was I was working for George Tiggs, a football player, and I wrote all of his things. For 8 months I worked for them. He was a famous football player. I think he worked for the Dallas Cowboys. And his board, I set up all the things to get to the fundraiser. And his board was asking me to write proposals for them or what have you. And I wrote one. This lady passed away. Maybe I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I wrote her a proposal over the weekend and brought it back to her. And I asked for $60,000 for a year to put it in play. And then she could hire somebody in the position to run it. It was a shelter for women. And I worked it out where the women would be, we'd buy two houses. The women would live there with their children. They would have responsibilities where each one of them went to school to better themselves. When one got better, they move out in another position, come in there. But they shared babysitting, they shared cooking, they shared everything. And the lady says to me, can you split that $60,000 with me? And I said, no. You asked me to do this. I did this. This proposal right here, I would get $150,000 to do it. That would be included of the $60,000. I'm not trying to make you rich. You asked me to write your dream on paper. There it is. And then I took it and I threw it across the table. It didn't cost me nothing. But no, you can't pick and choose what I will get to do something for you. I'm telling you, I'm going to do it for you as cheap as I can. And it's going to work. You got, I mean, she's rich already. But you want a part of my money out of my pocket. I'm supposed to take the $60,000 and slip you $30,000. I don't play like that. Take the whole 60. It never happened. She passed away. But I was I'm always in the company of big money, and I coordinate them to do things. The campaign for our children had a, if you look on, it's still, I have it written on LinkedIn in one of my articles, to see that board. It had state senators. It had the commissioner of health. It had the presidents and CEOs, executive directors for Black Health Coalition. I mean, about 12 or 13 people. But I coordinated and kept it in order. I guess you would call me a coordinator then, because I kept them in line. I kept the, you know, like the meeting schedule. I'm good at that, or I was. Maybe Alzheimer's setting in or something. And I want to say that on record. Short-term memory goes first.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, when you get to 70, the short-term memory goes first. When you go in a room and don't know why you went in that room, that's the short-term memory. So I was a good coordinator. I don't say I did all the work, but I kept it together. And that's what they would hire me for, is to coordinate an initiative. And Campaign for Our Children, Happy Birthday 2-Year-Old, TKO Tobacco, we did a lot of them. CDC had me interview the WIC program to see how it was affecting the mothers. I did focus groups, community-level focus groups. I would have Latino, whatever was necessary that they wanted to know the information from. I would gather the information and put it in form that they could read it. So maybe I'm the translator, too, because I take it from the community. I put on the focus group. I give them snacks or drinks or whatever. Then I pay them a stipend. Then I take the information, put it together, and hand it back up to, like, CDC or hand it to the county, Milwaukee County. I would, you know, I was the go-between. And like I say, I would say something like, I speak 7 different languages, all of them English, but I fit everywhere I go like a chameleon. I did the, there was one program I did. It was called for AIDS and HIV, where I'm so scared of COVID. But HIV and AIDS, at the time I was out there, everybody was afraid of that. And we did a campaign called The Circle of Friends Should Never End, including videos. And I interviewed every sexual preference that was out there, every one of them, AIDS victims, transvestites, whatever. I had never known that there were so many different levels of sexual activity with my gullible life, but I interviewed them in focus groups. I mean, some of the people I interviewed, I had a nephew bring the refreshments to the event, and these guys were so beautiful. They were so gorgeous. And he would come in and say, oh, Titi, fine women in there. I'm like, they're not women. Get out. You know, it was like they were so beautiful. But they were giving me the information that I needed to gather. I've been everywhere and talked to a lot of folks that people were afraid to even go in the same room or touch. So that job of advocate, that job at, I named my company 123 Health Access and 123 Healthcare Connect. Uh-huh. I was out there and I was doing it. I created a information log for all of the people who geared people into healthcare, mental health or what have you, the phone numbers and addresses. We had a conference to put together a pamphlet for the hospital association that if you looked in there, you could find where to send somebody for mental health, where to send someone, how to access all the services that were in Milwaukee County and surrounding suburbs. Mm-hmm. And we put that together, and then we found out as soon as you put it together, you'd have to update it on like a monthly basis, but I got the first project done. So I was good at bringing things together. And hopefully, like I told Mr. Sims, I was talking to him the other day, it's like, I don't know where I belong, but I'm going somewhere. You know, I'm going to do something on behalf of God. I'm going to do mm-hmm. something on behalf of healthcare. Milwaukee Healthy Women and Infants Project, that was something that I coordinated with the Black Health Coalition. They gave me everything to do, and I did it well because I was mm-hmm. doing it to make the initiative work, but all the funding's going away now, and that's one reason I told you I did for-profit work, working for the nonprofits to make their project work. But then I turned around and could do what I wanted to do with community development. So it sounds pretty crazy, but my mother's been wow. calling me crazy for a long time. Yeah, it's not about mm-hmm. the money. It's never been about the money. I had the mm-hmm. best CPA. I had the best lawyer. I had the best insurance agent. I paid them for the things I didn't know how to do. All I had to do was create and bring the money to the pool. I had a director who did the training.
Mm-hmm.
I had staff who backed me up and had me ready. When I go back out that door, my stuff was perfect. You know, staples in the right place. I'm passing out the paperwork for the committee members. I was in order.
Mm-hmm.
I was in order. So I don't know if I talked your face off yet, but you tell me if there's any questions you have or anything you want to ask me. The time is now, or you have my number. I believe I gave it to you. If not, I will. That you
yes.
have a pass with me anytime you want. And I want to say again, I am so impressed with your growth, and I'm hoping one day you're welcome, but I'm hoping that you get connected to my good brother in Japan, and he's doing mm-hmm. these, people trying to get there, and he's doing these tours for them, but he has a school, nonprofit school, that teaches from age 2 to 92, or however you'll be in Japan. He teaches mm-hmm. English, and he was supposed to come move back here this year. He turned 65. But he decided he and his wife to stay there and run their school. But they will do a tour. If anybody wants to go to Japan, you can coordinate it through him. I don't know any prices or anything. Y'all have to work that out.
Yes.
But I think uh-huh. he'll be a good match. He's a good guy. He's got the first college degree in the family.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm proud of him. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story about him is that he used to go to UWM in the dance. He used to dance And that's where he met his first wife. And there was fine arts, the African arts or what have you. And so one day at the Performing Arts Center, they were doing a dance in front of the Performing Arts. And he's a big guy. It was the first Mr. Tech bodybuilding kind of thing. And so the African dance, they had these scarves that went, I don't know how they were on, but you could see his butt. And when I saw it in the paper, I called him up. I said, Mike, is that your butt? And he said, how did you know it was me? I'm like, I changed your diaper.
Oh, my goodness.
why are you naked? He said, I'm not naked. That was a costume. I'm like, that's too wild. He said, that's African. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't care. I see your butt on the newspaper. So he thinks I'm crazy because I recognize that behind. He's a nice guy, and I think you'd like him, but I that's the only one I'm recommending now.
Okay. I think that would be a wonderful connection to have, and I hope he hears this podcast and we could link together, especially if he comes highly recommended by you.
He's my favorite. And in fact, I think we look alike, but... the thing was, we're going to build him his Japanese house. He wanted the house on the up high, and he had the little sticks or ladders that you climb up. And I said, I got the space for you. All you got to do is bring the material. We can do it. But this is the year he was supposed to come, and it's a real bad year. And I don't think he wants to come home anymore. He's going to make Japan home. But I'm not riding 17 hours on a plane to get there. He's going to have to. He used to come every year and bring students, his students here. And we'd have a multicultural training, and they tour Alabama. But once he got married, I guess they opened a school. He hasn't been back since mom's funeral, so that's been about 10 years. But he was supposed to move back this year when he retired, but they decided to open their own school. So life goes on. And I don't know that I'll ever get to see him again, but my heart is with him.
Wow.
I love him. I do. I love him. And we were the three musketeers, and he helped me save this place. And the one here, the oldest one, it was us three that had so much discipline that we're really tight. And the last four was under a different reign, and they're a little different. they're more into themselves more so than a group, a partnership. But life goes on.
Yes.
We won't drag the dirty laundry out, but I'm good.
Wow.
I was controller of the purse strings, I was controller of everything, so I understand that you don't need me no more, but I guarantee you that I was calling Jesus, you was calling me.
Mm.
At one particular time in your life. You know, I didn't know that all I owed was a prayer. That's all I ever owed in my entire life is a prayer. I didn't know that until recently. You know, I thought that I was supposed to take care of everybody. I really believe that family meant stick together and one for all for one, until 10 years ago, I saw that I had the wrong definition of family. Family are people that care about you and lift you up. They don't pull you down. God gives you a family if you let go. I couldn't let go. That was my deepest regret is that I couldn't let go of the term family until, you know, like I say now. I'm okay with it now. I can even let my children go. I know that they don't belong to me. They belong to God.
God, yes.
God loans us people for time. And then he takes them when he wants to take them, because my two girlfriends told me that, because I was down. I was down for the count with that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I have nobody to talk to. Well, talk to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I do, pray and keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
So, so you tell me. Yeah, I tell you, you tell me, did we miss out on selling the thing?
No,
the,
you really,
okay.
You really shared a lot of information that I think will bring healing and understanding to a lot of people on your journey into becoming the woman that you are today. And you have such a wealth of wisdom to offer young people. You know, I say that because every time I listen to you, I'm just enamored with awe of your life experiences and how you still maintain this level of love, compassion, and understanding despite those that have wrongfully come up against you. And I think many of us dealing with that today are looking for maternal guidance and influence in how to understand and cope with the kind of betrayal that we're seeing in families and friends and not understanding why, and also how to navigate, like you mentioned, corporate America and eventually coming to terms that it may not be for you and having to walk away. You mentioning you remember the day you turned your back. And I think many of us are dealing with a lot of those experiences as well, you know, coming in very naive and believing that there is this sense of equality and fairness and being met with this overwhelming attack, relentless attack on many of us based off of just rumors or just lack of respect, to say the least, for many black women. And
I know. It's hard, and it's going to get harder because of what's happening now. And we just have to figure out, you know, what I say, Jill, is the fact that if they realize, if people realize that they have the power to come together and do things themselves, they wouldn't be so dependent on the job. Now, they call me crazy for walking out on that kind of money.
Uh-huh.
You know, walking out on that kind of money. You walked out of there. What are you going to do? I don't know. But I couldn't do it for them anymore because the fact that they treated me so badly in this last case that they were going to make me do what they wanted to do. And who the hell did I think I was? You know, I took on the whole department, the whole educated medical department, saying, no, she is not going to suffer behind your bad decisions. She did everything right. You're going to pay for this one. I'm not stepping down. And they, you know, like they showed me. So I sent it to the state, and the state representative that I was supposed to turn it over to, My president wasn't there. He was busy, you know, at the corporation that had bought us. So the state representative, the governor got involved, It was a big mess, but I stayed 2 weeks to get my proper notice because I'm saying, I heard them say, who the hell does she think she is? I said, I'm the advocate that you hired. And my client, they said, do you know she's a white girl? I'm like, do you know Medicaid has more than black people?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
They put me in a room. They closed me in a room. I felt like I was in Guantanamo Bay somewhere. And my boss kept sticking her finger in my hand, in my face. And I'm like,
yeah.
I admired her for her education. And I admired her for everything. But she didn't know who I was. When I say I'll do something, I'll do it to death. You couldn't make me change my mind. And I didn't change my mind. I didn't. They had that girl in the hospital in restraints. And you know what it was about? It was about opioids. The same drug that's fighting right here now. Yes, it was. But she was taking them for pain, not for an addiction. And she was supposed to go in pain management. She did everything right. And there was no way, no way they were going to treat her like that. Her mother got involved. She said, I'm going to take her a few. I'm like, please don't let her have that in her system. Tell her to hang on a little bit more. I almost got it. I'm talking to three or four people. I'm talking to state. And they're telling me, you know, cutting off my phones and stuff. I don't care. This one. I'm going out winning. I won, but everybody quit. State level, everything broke up. No, you're not going to tell me I have the authority to do something and then going to tell me what I'm going to do? Who pays your salary? I said, I heard from my information is that because you have me, you have a salary. Understand where I know. I read. It goes real deep. But it was an opioid. I've been studying it since then. And I studied down here when the old people were saying they're going to take them from them for pain. I'm like, well, what are they going to give you? Then I got involved. What in the world are you going to take their pain pills? What are you talking about? And they have to find a new way. But then they keep giving it to, if they go to pain management, they will give them to the elderly. I'm like, don't play with them. But then they want them on the road driving. That's not something you should have in your body when you're driving. It makes you sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been playing with the opioid addiction since that time, and that was back in 94.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had the girl in, they had her in a straitjacket. And she didn't do anything wrong. She was not an addictive person. She just couldn't deal with pain. And she was set up to go to pain management. You know, her last pill was to get her in that project. And then I guess the corporation got in a fight with the hospital and they're not going to pay for that anymore. You're going to pay for hers. And they said, who do you think you are? I said, I'm an advocate. That's what I was hired to be. You're not going to change that. And when I got finished with that, nobody's talking to me. I was walking out the door saying, Lord, I don't know what happened. And maybe I overspoke myself this time. I've been quiet for 30 years. But that was the fight. That was the last fight. The first fight, when I first got the job, was they were denying a woman a hospital bed. And I went back there. I wasn't in their department at that time. And I said, why are you denying her a hospital bed? And they said, I didn't know that was your friend. I said, it has nothing to do with her being my friend. It's the fact that she's sick. Her doctor ordered it. Why she can't have that hospital bed? In fact, it was my best friend's mother, the one that I hired. Yeah, the one that worked in my office as my director. It was her mother. And they said they had never seen me upset, but my eyes get kind of bucked and my fingers go to pointing, you know, go to shaking. And I was mad because how do you put people through hell when they're sick?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the advocate job. They had the right advocate.
Yes, they sure did.
I might not fight about myself. I get quiet, but for somebody else that you know, like you taking advantage of, you got me. I will open up like a can of worms. Be all mm-hmm. over you like some leeches. So don't hurt. You don't do people wrong because they can't fight you.
Yeah.
Come on now. You pushing a pencil. Be in her face mm-hmm. and tell her she can't have one. And say, I didn't know that was your friend. I don't care who it was. You can't just play with people like that. They're sick. And if the mm-hmm. doctor wrote it, obey it. If you don't want it to be done anymore, go to the doctor and say, don't write it no more. But don't put the mm-hmm. patient in the middle of it. So I was a bad girl. I was a bad girl at mm-hmm. that point, but I actually reported directly to the president.
Yeah.
You know,
but
I wasn't scared because...
You know what they say, we either stand for something or fall for anything, and very few of us are willing to take a stand, even knowing that we'll be faced with retaliation of some sort, whether that's illegal office surveillance or whatever tactic they'll use to blacklist you or whatever for taking a stand. But I do applaud the women before me that took these stands first and foremost so they walk so we can sit. And I appreciate it so much hearing from those of you that also said, hey, this isn't right. What you guys are doing is not just, and you don't have the merit to do it. And I will be darned if I sit back and allow it to happen to me or anybody else unjustly in this room. And it takes a certain kind of woman with courage and faith in God to stand up against that kind of beast. And I applaud you and those that I know and don't know that have been faced with that testimony and have done the same thing. Those of you that follow my story know that I've taken many stances in corporate America for just violating my rights and privacy and so forth, because I stood up to bullies, and you know, it is what it is. You know, people get too caught up in their egos and idea of having
I think you lose something when you're pushing a pencil than when you're working in a hospital setting. There's not too many people that don't have hearts that works for patients in the patient's face and in the family's face. They're not going to be as harsh as somebody sitting behind a desk, you know, pushing a pencil, trying to save a dollar. You know, that's a different, that's a different take on it. But I was able to do a lot of good. And when I look back, everybody that was in my department was gone. They had their own companies going. I'm like, wow, what happened? They walked out because the whole culture, there's a culture that you have to be a part of when you're in a corporation.
It is.
All for one, one for all. You're not with that culture, you better get your tail out of there.
Because you will
they'll
be
change
placed
your soul.
On their target list. Quick, fast, and hurry.
They'll change, and I went back to visit, you know, before everybody had left. I said, I'm going to pull my four bricks out of this corner in the new building y'all built. And one of the guys started laughing. I said, he said, you going to pull us down? I said, no, I'm just going to take my bricks that I made for y'all. I'm going to take mine with me when
That's
I leave.
Right. Take it with me. All the knowledge and everything. That's coming with me. Guys, continue
I hope your building don't fall, but I'm going to take my bricks out that corner because I know I put something up in here and I want my bricks. I'm going to build a playground for my babies.
That's right. That's right. You know, you got to know when to
I don't know how long. Did I go over your time limit or I can do that too, you know.
No, it's quite okay. I mean, you know, I find a lot of our listeners, from what they tell me, is that they find my podcast so intriguing that they will take it with them while they're driving to pick up their kids from school and play it on the way back and play it while they do dishes. And so they'll get little nuggets here and there. And I'm all for it because I don't want to put a time limit on this information that is life-changing. And, you know, I encourage people, do it within the time slot that you have available, whether you play it in the shower or wherever you can, to get some of this information, because it's not being passed down the way it used to be.
I hope one day to be inspired to have my own podcast,
yes,
to talk and to run it like you run it, but to say whatever I want to say, you know, because I'm really tired. I'm on all three sites, and I feel like it blocked when they don't want to hear something I got to say. I'm going to say it. If I have to say something about Facebook on LinkedIn, something about LinkedIn on X, I'm going to say it. But I want it all together. You know, I'm a grown-ass woman.
That's how I feel, ma'am. I can tell you stories of how they try to censor me on LinkedIn when I drop these podcasts. They're like, "Oh no, we can't let that drop," and it'll just be loading for like 9 hours. But I'm like, "Come on, y'all take it on my other post. Why won't you take this podcast?"
the last one. I have a girl. She's on Facebook, and she talks about all the things that you were talking about, the cults and whatever. And I said, "You got to listen to this." And I sent it to her, and I said, "You got to listen to this," because she's talking the same thing you were talking. And it's not that I didn't believe her. I was saying, get out of it. Let it go. Move on. Don't cry about what they did to you. Go on. Your life is your baby's kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if she listened, but when I heard you, it was the one about Angie Stone and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
My mouth was hanging open like, wow. And I know some things you used to post, I tried to go get it wouldn't let me through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They do censor. They don't want... You're going to have to
keep... And I'm so glad for you, because you would tell me. You're like, girl, it didn't play. I said, what?
Let me get his name right. Wardell Sims Jr. He had me go look at some, and it says, you're leaving this site. I'm like, damn, you dangerous? They won't let me leave. I'm saying, look, I'm gonna come back to you and say why they won't let me through to you. You got something scary over there? You know,
let me tell you, the only thing we holding is the truth, and that's a heavy bomb for them. So they gotta put disclaimers like you're about to find out what it's really about before you leave.
I just seen some crazy stuff since I've been here in this state, you know, like I told my mom at one time, she loved working out in the yard. This place looked like a park when her and her friends were alive. I sit on the porch because I don't like bugs, animals, or nothing like that. And she found a loaf of bread planted in her garden. That disturbed her so bad. I'm like, why, Mom? She said, some kind of hoodoo. Hoodoo? You don't believe in God and believe in hoodoo. You can't have two masters.
You can't have two masters. And that's the thing. You know, they do operate from a space of fear, and they try to put that stuff around you to become fearful. And I think, and I said in the podcast before, is that I don't want people to be afraid necessarily of these things, but to be knowledgeable, because the church doesn't really teach you of what it is and how to protect yourself. And so even if you could be going through something, sister, that has nothing to do with what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And whether it's a divorce
or you're having problems at work, but whatever that negative energy that you're already carrying with you from somewhere else, it could latch on to that. You know what I mean? If you're not in a high vibing space. And so it's so important for you to take that time out every day and get centered and pray and release that negativity, because you don't even want to give them space to latch on to something that you don't even realize is bothering you to that extent. And so I keep saying, this is the information we need to teach our people and let them know, because you're like, well, how did that latch on to me? And I don't even fear that. Or I don't even praise that. Yeah, but you kind of opened the door when you was carrying that resentment towards your cousin or whatever it is. If you don't release it, if you don't heal from it, you're giving it a pathway to latch on to. So I use this platform as a means for people to release whatever it is that's bothering them or have them, you know, feel in some kind of way, because we don't want to give the enemy any space to even tiptoe in, because we're healing through what he's doing to us.
I tell you, the devil rides dirty.
Amen.
He sure had me by the foot on Tuesday. He was pulling.
Oh, Lord.
He was pulling. Lord. He was pulling, because the fact that, what did I say, I started out with a sister. She's a sister. Uh-huh. She's my father's third family. She's the oldest.
Yes.
She took care of mother. She took care of her sister that's challenged. And she was saying stuff on Facebook. It didn't sound like her. So I texted her to say, what are you spitting out that poison for? And she went on. And she said, I don't want to be like my father. I said, you could never be like our dad. He was possessed. I studied him to find out all about his life. If you give me a chance, I'll tell you, you could never be him. He was messed up before he even went to the war. He was messed up as a child. I studied him to find out why he left and why he loved me really hard. You know, he really loved me, and then he started resenting me. Like, don't come by me, you know, and I'm like, why I can't come where you are? You're a woman now. What the hell does that mean? I've been a woman, you know, I was always a girl.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you, something wrong with you? So anyway, I got her in the morning. Then I went into getting ready for the doctor visit. Then they did this changing of the locks to, this is air property. Why would you change the locks without telling me why you're changing the locks? You know, why are you doing the stupid stuff? So my blood pressure went up. You know, I could feel the throbbing in my neck. Then the lights went out. Pitch black dark. They said it'd be on by 5 o'clock. 10 p.m. that night, it still was not on. I'm sitting in the pitch black dark. And the storm comes through. You got no warnings or anything. I sat in the chair and started laughing, saying, Lord, if the devil didn't have me today, he ain't going to never get me again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was fit to be tied. I was tired. I was wore out. I was mad. And I couldn't read the Bible because it was dark. I didn't set up for the flashlights and all that kind of stuff, preparing for the storm, because they said the lights would be back on. I could see. And they didn't come back on. Alabama Power let me down that day. But the devil had me so tough, I was sitting in the chair in the dark laughing. And when the lights came back on at 10:30 or so, I was still laughing, saying, Lord, the devil had me by the foot.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the turn. That one I told him not to wake up. She was woke. Look, she was woke. She was ready to tear some stuff.
Yes,
it was just too much in one day.
Please tell her that she's welcome to share her stories on my podcast. I would love to hear about her experiences as well. But I think I said in the last podcast that, you know, these individuals, sister, love to throw rocks to hide their hands, and then they want to kiki about it. And not funny. This is not entertaining.
No.
Yes. Immature, definitely. But it just surprises me that these so-called family members even find the time and energy to sit there and think about doing these things and getting
and then,
enjoyment
out
of
this. I mean, you know, I'm thinking, this is what I'm thinking, is that they believe they're fighting with you. And
yes.
I'm sitting here listening and feeling what they're doing, knowing what they're doing, because I raised
uh-huh.
them, right? And so
yeah.
I'm laughing because I'm like, I'm not moving. Why do you think you hate me so much? And in fact, it's like January, last year, January, one of them came up in my face yelling at me, saying what I did or what I didn't do. And I'm sitting there laughing inside saying, you got to be crazy. You have,
mm-hmm.
You have to have lost a marble or two. I have done nothing to you but love you. And if
yeah.
you want to, you need to get a line up to heaven. This was your mama's world.
Mm-hmm.
I was helping her. You got it twisted. You think I'm quiet because what? I was helping her. I
mm-hmm.
promised God for her. Now, if she did something in your life, you can't blame me for it. I'm not going to take the blame for it. You wait till you get to heaven and discuss it with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was ugly, true. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, I won't take I don't feel guilty about nothing, you know, that I've done other than not know that the term family didn't mean family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really believe to my heart that family was to take care of each other. That's what I believe. To find
yeah.
out in the last 10 years that you turned on me, why?
I know.
Why?
I know.
You think I deserve nothing? Why? It doesn't
yeah.
matter why you're doing what you're doing. Just know that I'm not fighting your back. You run around the circle like a dog, a crazy dog that chases its tail. Because I ain't moving. You don't want a piece of me. Where you say,
a wild, cooling animal. Don't even get involved in that dog fight.
I'm saying, yeah. did you, you said it before. You don't want none of this.
That's
I
right.
They
want the smoke, but they don't want it. That's
uh-uh.
why
please,
like, you know, let me just stay calm.
Please let us stay. Let the bee stay dormant.
Yeah,
let me stay dormant.
You think they don't know? They know you got a whole They know you got a whole beast inside of you. They know
yeah.
that a lot of us to walk this walk of being a Christian. It took a lot of experience of learning ourselves, learning how to tame the beast within. Because believe me, if it was that easy to take our sister Cindy down or to take me down, you wouldn't need a squad. So you need a squad when it comes to certain spiritual warriors, because you know that just like there's good angels, there's bad angels, there's a little bit of both.
Oh, Lord.
So we learned to tame that bad side
I'm
and
saying.
Give you what's good. But trust and believe
you
don't want none of
I'm
this. Just go
they
about
don't,
your business.
They don't call to talk to me. They don't call to discuss
nothing. We're
going to
help you turn around and walk that way. We'll
I'm
just
saying.
Tell you that
I'm saying.
Why you walked your huffing and puffing.
when the episode was happening, he had an audience, and I'm sitting on my rollator, you know, because I need a hip on the left side, and so
yes.
she didn't come close enough for me to grab her, but I'm looking at her, and I'm smiling, but she was waking up the beach.
You know, it reminds me, you know, I know a lot of people. They see me now and they're like, oh, she's just so sweet and kind and loving and everything nice like pie. But
mm-hmm.
I think back to my youthful days and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I was
mm-hmm.
fiery. Those that knew me in high school, college, all throughout my teenage and I would say early 20 years, I was ready for the smoke. It didn't matter who it was, what time it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to I had to walk a very, very close path with God where he had to yoke me back and say, child, don't, we don't want to unleash all that on everybody. Everybody ain't worth all that unleashing. Quick to turn around and say, you said what? Who are you talking to? But now, you know,
they can't handle my baby. Not many people can handle this. I'm trying to think who was trying to. I have a mother, a lady that walked up to me. I did my first church presentation, and I had the whole church crying. And at the end of the presentation, she walked up. She said, "I'll be your mother," and she's been my mother ever since. So she prays for me. That's who I called. I called her. I said, "Mom, I just need to hear you. I don't need nothing." She turns 94 in May, and I told her I was going to write a thank you to her. And she said, "You know you ain't got, that long. You just said it 3 or 4 times." I'm like, "Oh, oh, I better get on that.
Yes,
but
yes.
She prays for me, but she actually the whole church crying. Now I'm crying too because.
Yes.
What I was trying to say is that have you ever looked in your mother's face and she's yelling at you about something you didn't do, but she's so hurt by it, by somebody else being on her head, you know, telling her that you did something and you know you didn't do it, but to see the hurt in her face and not be able to say anything because if you say something, you're going to get somebody in trouble or whatever. But to see that hatred come out of her for you, and all you do is love her.
Yeah.
But I said, she's gone. She moved back to Alabama, and I'm free, and I don't have a mother right now, but I'm going to do this without her. And the lady walks up after this. She's crying with a little handkerchief. Hand me one.
Yeah.
And she said, I'll be your mother. And I'm like, you're my mother. And she's been my mother. She was also over the faith community on my outreach for Campaign for Our Children. It was 4 units.
Yeah.
She was over the faith community. She was at every church I went to speak. And she spoke on behalf of the faith community. And one thing in her presentation, she said, girls, don't let him call you boo. Because he's calling you boo because he don't want to remember your name to accidentally call it to somebody else. And I'll never forget that part. Don't let him call you boo or babe or whatever.
Right.
Tell him to call you by name. So when he messes up and calls somebody's name, it'll be yours. I said, go on, Ms. Farris. Go on, baby. Go on.
That's old school wisdom that got to be passed down. I love the old school wisdom.
I'm telling you, they know the facts. So she got...
Yes.
She had 4 kids, and she's got all grand boys, and I think she's got adopted daughters like me. Her daughter passed away maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but I've been trying to get to Wisconsin to see her again. And I said, Mama, they won't let me go from down here, but I'm going to get there if they have to whip tie and Whoopi Goldberg has to come through here with her bus with the bathroom next to the seat. And she just cracks up. I'm coming, Mama, I'm coming. But I just need you to pray for me today. And that's how I raised up from Tuesday because the devil had that leg and I was 50 feet tired. The beast was out. The beast was let loose because I was so angry. I got so angry. And I'm like, how did I let that happen? I was just tired. And that was like the last straw. You know, you don't do something and disrespect me like that. I'm sitting right here. All you got to do is say, I'm going to do this. And why? That's all.
You don't even
live in this state. Why are you here messing with the property?
This is the stuff that family will do just to be seen.
Irritating? I don't know. You want to show me? You want to show me your muscles? You know what? It really
flexing on the wrong one. I know that's right.
I'm saying.
You know,
I was too tired to be quiet. And so it went from there. I'm trying to be still so the doctor don't put me in the hospital for high blood pressure.
That's the other reason.
They're trying to give me medication.
Don't even let them
put
you in
the hospital. You want to take something for depression? I said, I'm not depressed. I'm broke. Big difference. Give me $1 million. That's 30 here I could take. I'm not depressed. I'm broke. That's a big difference.
I know that's right.
And when I put my finger back on the money-making deals, I will get out of here. But until that time, I'm not going to take a pill to get me out of I'm not depressed.
No, ma'am.
They depressed.
Don't give you these diagnoses that
it doesn't do anything but helps you when you come into the situation when you angry or whatever. I said, well, I'm angry all the time when they mess with me.
Yep. That's right.
You know, if you take this pill, it will help your leg feel better or whatever. I said, did you hear what you just told me? You want me to take a pill for depression to help me with the pain in my leg? Why you can't give me a pain pill? I don't need something for my brain. Ain't nothing wrong with my brain.
Yes. No, and that's where we mess up at. Many of us that mistake.
I don't want no medicine.
We have to go back to natural remedies. And I don't know where this philosophy came from where they don't think God ever created us to get angry. I mean, obviously, even Jesus got angry at one point and turned tables over. He didn't get a pill. We're going to get angry, right? We're here in human form. We're experiencing foolishness. And it's virtually impossible to deal with the kind of ignorance that we have to deal with and not get angry, okay? We don't need a pill or a forced diagnosis to be angry. It's okay, right? Oh, my goodness. Well, we got to heal through it.
Stupidity is an inside job. You can't fix that. If somebody wants to be stupid, you can't fix that. You can't fix stupidity.
You can't.
That's a chosen.
They have to want to learn something.
Yes. If they don't want to learn, you can't fix it.
Let me tell you something, Miss Cindy. I find myself, and I'm drawn to older people with wisdom. Even when I did work in corporate America, all of my associates, my closest friends, would always be 20 to 30 years older than me. And what I would offer them in terms of helping them with the technology aspects of the job, if I could sit down in their seat and show them some things. The wisdom that I find they've given me throughout the years, I couldn't even pay them back with that kind of help that I gave them because
that's on the job education.
You can't get that in school. You remind me of that old school wisdom where they would just tell me about life and experiences and people. And sometimes people would say to me, Jewel, you seem, years beyond your time. It's because I've gotten these little nuggets from women like you that I take with me and I try to give back to young people and say, listen, don't go around snickering and poking fun at people with those hyenas in the office. Attach yourself to somebody with wisdom and knowledge that can give you some information that will become useful for you to pull out your pocket when you need it. Because when the enemy comes, those clowns over there can't help you. They don't have anything to pull out their pocket but foolish games, okay? Because that's all they mastered is how to be deceiving and play foolish games. No, we don't need that. We need real keys, open doors.
You know what I'm saying? My page on Facebook is called Big Mama's Corner, and I made it for a sister that passed away before I could hand it to her. Because she had so many pages, I couldn't keep up with her. I'm like, I made it. And my son, Adagon from Nigeria, he adopted me. I don't know what year it was, but he was a single parent. Now he's back with his wife, and they got three boys. And I said, well, where's my girl? Well, anyway, he told me when he met me, said, "Can I call you Big Mama?" I said, "No way. Big girls don't like to be called Big Nothing. You can call me Mommy, you can call me whatever you want to call me, but don't put that big on there." But when this lady kept popping around, I created the corner. And so it was a week before I could give it to her, she passed away. And so I didn't go over there, but the pastors went over there and started praying. And it's closed off to private. I think it's about 50 members in there. I'm out there with Cynthia and Cindy Cooper, which was my mother's thing I put on there. She couldn't remember her password all along. My thing and coming on social media was LinkedIn. Somebody asked me to go over to Facebook, and when I put Cynthia Cooper over on Facebook, there was two different entities. The Cindy Cooper on Facebook was a private thing, and then the Cynthia Cooper on LinkedIn had two different phone numbers, AT&T versus Verizon. But when I put them together on Facebook, the whole daggone thing blew up. My page was speaking Pakistani. It was speaking, the language. When it all blew up because they were trying to merge it together, and it was two different entities. So I was like saying, well, what the world happened there? My AT&T and Verizon, it went crazy. And so I was on the thread on Facebook, and I got another person on the thread saying it's their thread. They're in Milan. So I guess I had been absent from Facebook so long that they picked up that thread and put it in a different country. And so I'm fussing with Facebook saying, what the world going on? And they couldn't tell me. I mean, there's nobody to talk to. So I just kind of stayed there. And that Big Mama's Corner is a private corner that didn't come out in public. But I'm noticing that the Cindy Cooper that's out there, and Cindy Cooper's Great Adventure, that was my daughter. I was following my daughter. All those things are open to public, and all kinds of crazy people come on there. But that Big Mama's Corner is a sacred corner, and I think I'm going to keep that. And Adagon's on there, too. He's the one that told me stay here because I was supposed to hold this family together, and I was like, I can't do it. I'm not the glue, and I'm not a mothering type. I'm more of a disciplinary. And I don't play. I didn't get to play as a kid. I don't want to play as an adult. You know, talk to me and tell me why, but you better be big enough to tell me why, in fact, that it moves me to change. I'm not going to change it because you're crying. Cry me a river. I don't care about you crying. Mm-hmm. But you better be right. You better not be lying. You know, because I know the truth. And my problem is that I have a good memory. I'm speaking on right now. So I'm getting up there, and it said to mention all that stuff coming. So just in case, I'm speaking on today. My mind still remembers everything from a child of 2 to 3 years old to now. Everything. I know what happened to each one of them and why, you know, what their life was like. You're not going to come and tell me a fairy tale. No, you're not. To get me to do what you want. I don't work like your mother. Do you understand? I really don't care about you crying. I don't care about what you want. I'm caring about what you are entitled to. You don't make or break me, and you don't tell me what to do. It's like, I will eat dirt and die. You don't know me. You don't want none of this.
Yes, yes.
You let her stay dormant. Let the other side stay dormant, because I know love as well as I know hate.
Exactly.
I know them both. I choose love. I choose God.
Amen.
I don't have a specific religion that I tie down to, because I never committed to one. I love God. I love him directly. He talks to me just like he talks to anybody else. I am just as important to him, like I say on all my posts. God don't have no favorites. Maybe your mother did, but God doesn't. I was there on a promise to God, not to your mother. It was for your mother, from God. If he let her come back, I'll make her happy. I know you can't make people happy, but you can keep them out of trouble where they think they have. You know, yeah. Keep them busy. But I gave her everything. I gave her my life for the last 25 years. The last 10 years have been, I stayed longer because I knew she had tied this up, but I was going to walk away from it. And God wouldn't let me go. Everything I went towards, it just blew up. I've been trying to get to Wisconsin. I still got my suitcases packed from 10 years ago. I got to see what's in there. There's 3 suitcases in my closet still packed.
Oh, wow.
Because I couldn't never get out of here because it was always something else. Sent, don't go. Sent, don't go. I got so many names. The family calls me Sent. The Facebook calls me Cindy. Business people call me Cindy. And my great-great-grandmother says, you spoke to the elderly people. I'm an old soul, too. I was raised by my mother's grandmother. So uh-huh. I was raised by my great-grandmother. And down
wow.
here where the land is being sold was from her other side, the paternal great-grandmother. That's who I was here for. She said, baby, it never changes unless you stay. And I'm like, stay here, grandma? What do you want to stay a place where people don't like you?
Yeah.
You have more right here than they do. And I said, well, grandma, I don't like being here. I really don't. But she didn't like, she said my name was Cynthia, and that's what she demanded people call me. She said, you don't know what a name means. That's your name, not Cynthia. I said, well, they write the check in Cynthia. And she didn't think that was funny, but the older people in this community were more than 20 years my age. They've been my friends for the last 25 years, and they call me for resources. Can you do this? Can you do this? Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. They don't believe in money system. They believe in the barter system. So they would give me food, grocery, to do a deed. Like a lawyer would give them, they would give a lawyer $500 to do. I would take care of it, and they bring me $50 worth of grocery. So that's been my last 25. It's been fun, I tell you. But I am an old soul. I love to cook. And I was cooking for them while they worked in the yard. Somebody sent over for a plate. I got a plate for you, but you send the $10 back so I can buy more food. We had a principal. We had 2 or 3 black principals in the schools. We didn't have, real powerful people here that stayed. They came back to stay. But the younger source of the ones that died, they're acting up a little bit. And it's changing somewhat. But there are a few good families that are in religion and, you know, they put their whole family together. They're putting the kids through school. They're doing what they're supposed to do. But I haven't put anything together for them yet. And I was ready to walk away. And I'm still here. So I'm thinking this guy saying, stay put. I kept hearing, stay put, Kizzy. I don't know what movie that's from, but that's what I kept hearing in my ear. Sit down and stay put. Maybe it's my great-grandmother. I don't know who's whispered in my ear saying, you ain't going nowhere just yet. You ain't done. So I'm believing I'm done, being that I'm on your podcast. I believe I can go back to work now. I believe I can start billing people after this.
Oh, my goodness. You got to do something else. But I am
Create something. I need to create something to bring in. Yeah, because my grandkids ain't about that $10 for Christmas and all that. They're asking for cars and things. I'm like, what? Where y'all come from? We used to play with boxes.
I know. It's a different time. It's a different time. And I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show. I know we're pushing up on almost 3 hours. I didn't even realize. Lost track of time talking to you and
that's
learning so much.
I'm saying, you sure our podcast is supposed to be this low?
You probably hit the record, but I'm so excited to have you on and learn from you. And definitely I want to welcome you back on because I'm sure you got more stories to tell. Brother Thomas said he wanted to also be on with you and exchange some of the similarities he had in his life story with you. So maybe we can work on
him,
that
another time. I would tell him, for me, I wasn't shunning him. It's just that he was so powerful, and I was so scared, you know, that I didn't know if I could communicate. I haven't been on radio or anything, so I wanted to feel it first, and then now I'm all right with it.
Absolutely.
I know how it works. I'm easy with it. Tell him I'll take it. I know, but he's powerful, and you guys knew what you were talking about. I'm like, I don't fit in there. I don't know what they're talking about, but I understand it a little bit more. I'll tell them I'll take it now. I'm okay now.
You're a pro now.
I'm a pro now.
I can't shut up. I'm sorry. It's quite okay. I'm so happy to have you on, and I didn't even get to read today's scripture, which is quite lengthy, but I'm going to tell you guys where I got it from, which was Ephesians chapter 4, 1 through 25, and it talks about being mature, and it aligns with our topic today, which was the gift of growing pains. And, you know, everything just lined up perfectly with it being International Women's Day and Cynthia sharing her growing pains and stories with us that she's learned throughout her journey. So definitely read that scripture when you have a chance, and I'm just going to briefly run through the comments from the last podcast, They Can't Handle the Truth, that came pouring in, because you know I like to give you guys a shout-out as well. And our dear lovely Cynthia also listened to the podcast. She's an avid supporter, and she stated it was a powerful truth and thanked us for sharing, or thanked me for sharing. It was a solo podcast, and thank you so much, Sister Cynthia, for that feedback. Brother Benjamin Cheyenne said, thanks for sharing that, Jewel. You did a very great job and killed it by yourself. Your topic was very relevant and relatable also. It's always a pleasure listening to you. You know, Brother Benjamin, I want to thank you for that encouragement because it took a while to get to that space where I felt comfortable not just telling my truth, but doing so by myself, and just hearing those words really meant a whole lot. So thank you so much, Benjamin, for the encouragement. Brother Ken Cash commented, I'm yelling, you just made my top 10, Jewel, and you get a star. Remember to keep smiling. It's a good, lasting impression. Thank you, Brother Ken. I appreciate it, especially getting to your top 10. I don't know if it's your top 10 podcasters or people, but whatever the list is, I'm happy to be there. Thank you so much. Brother Owen Campbell said, Jewel Claxton, keep on keeping on. Stay safe and stay blessed. Thank you, Brother Owen, another avid supporter and commenter. I will do my best to try to keep myself in a safe zone and telling my truth. But it is what it is, and we have to answer our call. And then we have Brother Sam Dahlman said, just love it, your views of life and love. Thank you, Brother Sam. We love you, too. We love your support. I appreciate your commentary. And then we have Brother Ted Grunza, who says, I have three words to say. I love you for talking about spiritual warfare and getting down to the no-holds-barred conversations. Thank you, Brother Ted Grunza. I know I definitely would not have been here 5 years ago talking about this issue, but as I said in the last podcast, they came for me, so I researched about them. Thank you, Brother.
And my last commenter was Michael Hopkins, who said, amen, sister. I will close out with that. Thank you, Brother Michael. Again, Sister Cynthia, it's been a pleasure to have you on, to finally hear from you. And I hope that more supporters would be as courageous as you are to come onto the podcast, hopefully multiple times. And even bring a friend. I love hearing your stories and releasing what doesn't serve you. I hope that that served your highest purpose today. And I am, again, so humbled and appreciative that you've taken the time to be on our show. Thank you, Sister Cynthia.
I appreciate you asking me, and I was so happy to be here, and I hope it goes through to help someone. And if I am available for you at any time, just hit me up. I'll put my number on there for you. And I'd love to talk with you and Brother Thomas on a different podcast. And I promise to be less talkative on the next one to listen. I really enjoy listening to your podcast. I do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And for all of you, please continue to tune in. And you're welcome to comment and share any thoughts, ideas for future podcasts. We're open to, and we appreciate you guys just listening and sharing your stories and listening to ours as well. So until we hear from you guys again, take care and stay blessed to all of our followers and supporters. Take care now. Bye.
Bye-bye, baby.